Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toe.
Well, you're either with us or against us. These were the famous words of President George Bush in the aftermath of September 11 and the terrorist attacks. And essentially, the world is divided into two camps, according to this way of thinking, us and them, and you have to pick sides.
Now, back then, that kind of black and white thinking was actually quite astounding, but we seem to have made our peace with it today because we find ourselves in this polarised political culture where, depending on where you sit on the political spectrum, words like liberal and conservative can actually be dirty words. So we find ourselves living in an us and them world where it's easy to demonise the opposition.
Yeah, well, that's the diagnosis, anyway, of Scott Sauls, who's the senior pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashville in Tennessee, and he's the author of the book Jesus Outside the Lines, A Way Forward for Those Who Are Tired of Taking Sides. Scott's joining us via Skype from Nashville. So, Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Simon. It's good to be with you.
Now, you open your book by saying you wrote it because you were tired of taking sides in a political climate that tends to run off outrage. People who are looking to be offended. Has this become worse in the last few years, or has it always been like this in the US?
I don't know if it's become worse, but it certainly has become more pronounced and visible. And I think that social media has a lot to do with that. People feel a lot more free to express whatever their outrage might be on their Twitter feed or Facebook accounts or what have you. But it's most certainly a dynamic that exists. We've got a lot of angst and anger and outrage out there about a lot of things, about politics, about various issues that are contested in the culture between different ideologies. And so it's certainly an issue.
Now, Scott, you're a pastor, but aren't Christians known for taking sides? Wasn't it the Christians who were the ones that kicked off the culture wars, campaigning and lobbying over political issues like abortion, but other things as well?
Well, I think there are a lot of us in the Christian community that would not necessarily align ourselves with the methodology that you're describing right now of sort of an us against them posture in cultural issues and, you know, seeking to acquire power and putting people in their place. I think that if we go back to sort of the methodologies of Jesus and the way that he engaged with his culture, it seems that those who were most drawn to his method and to his way of communicating actually ended up being the more secular people rather than the religious community. In fact, he seemed to always be offending the religious people and was very endearing and inviting and approachable to those who were not religious. And so in that movement that you just described that started, I suppose, around the 1990s, many would argue, I would argue, that there was a bit of a departure, a significant departure from the way that Jesus would engage with his own culture. And I think we can learn, hopefully, from what many of us believe to be a failed project of the religious fundamentalism of the 90s.
In your book, you talk about the mutual respect that grew between Dan Cathy, the president of the fast food chain Chick-fil-A, and activist Shane Windmeyer. And they found a common ground despite their different views on same-sex marriage. Now, this seems like a really uncommon story, and yet it shouldn't be the case, right, that people of very different ideas and commitments should be able to come together and be friends, really.
Yes, I agree with that. And, you know, that is, I think, a wonderful example, you know, that you mentioned. And really what led to their friendship across the lines of their very significant differences in ideology and belief was that one of them approached the other for friendship, and they actually sat down and had a conversation. You know, Dan Cathy approached Shane Windmeyer, and his agenda was not to lecture or scold or get his point across. His goal was to just sit and listen to the story of how it feels to be a gay man in modern times. How does a gay man perceive the religious community and especially the Christian community? And are there ways that whatever relational tensions might exist there because of culture wars could be bridged? And the two of them developed a friendship that was sort of publicized by an essay that was actually written in the Huffington Post by Shane Windemeyer, where he titled his essay, "I Am Coming Out of the Closet," basically, as a friend of Dan Cathy. It really began just with two human beings sitting down together with the baseline of agreeing to treat one another with dignity and respect and to listen to one another's stories rather than passing judgment on one another.
You mentioned social media before, how it sequesters us in these chambers where we basically talk to people who agree with us. Don't you think it seems ironic that, you know, we live in this information age and have access to all this history and information out there, but yet we only use it perhaps to talk about stuff with people who think the same as we do?
Well, yes, and it's very interesting, the dynamic of the rants that happen and the rage that happens on social media, because like you say, Justine, people are really, the only effect that people have is to just stir up people who already agree with them. I think I made mention in the introduction of the book to a Facebook post I saw not too long ago where somebody wrote, "Dear person ranting about your angry political views on Facebook, congratulations, you have convinced me to change my mind. Signed, no one." And so I think that really does make your point. I don't think anybody's being persuaded by scolding. It's never really happened in the history of the world. How many people do we know that have been won over to a position because somebody on the other side of the position scolded them and lectured them and shamed them? It just doesn't happen.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. We're talking with Scott Sawles from Nashville about living in a polarized political culture in the United States. Is it the case that we've given up on assuming the best of each other, or if we ever had that? But it almost seems like we just assume the absolute worst motives for opponents these days.
Well, I would say that is typically true when we haven't actually sat down and had a conversation with the so-called opponents. But I think there's a lot to be hopeful about. There's an excerpt that I include in the introduction of the book, actually, that I think is a stellar example. And it's from an essay written by a chaplain from Harvard University. And he talks about the differences between Christians and atheists. And he said, "The divide between Christians and atheists is deep, and that he is dedicated to bridging that divide, to working with atheists and Christians and people of all different beliefs and backgrounds on building a more cooperative world." And he says, "We have a lot of work to do. My hope is to help foster better dialogue between Christians and atheists, and that together we can work to see a world in which people are able to have honest, challenging, and loving conversations across the lines of difference." So that chaplain from Harvard, his name is Chris Stedman, and he's an atheist. He's a secular humanist chaplain. I think he's actually transferred over to Yale now. But he's saying things that I deeply believe in, that I think that, you know, your broadcast, you know, is very excellent at modeling. And that is that there is so much common ground, even between people of faith and people who don't have faith. There's actually a lot more common ground than not on many issues. I think everybody wants to see the alleviation of poverty happen. I think that everybody wants to see more justice in the world and less cruelty. I think that everybody wants to see equality happen between the genders. And so I think there's plenty of common ground that people who differ on some fundamental things can still very meaningfully come together on.
Yeah, so there's places where you can connect, even if your worldview has some pretty significant differences as well. I wonder about the Christian idea of loving your enemy. Might this be a good kind of basis from which to begin to think about, you know, living with difference, for instance?
Yes, well, I think that, you know, if you go back and read about the life of Jesus, it's very difficult not to conclude that the stronger your convictions are about the person and work of Jesus and the love that he came to bring and the life that he came to live and the path that he came to establish, the less offensive we should be and the more difficult we should be to offend, because he came with a message of grace and of kindness and of love. And he even talked about not being the best kinds of friends, but also being the best kinds of enemies. And he said that his followers are to figure out creative ways to love even people who oppose them. A friend of mine and former colleague named Tim Keller talked about tolerance, and he said, true tolerance is not about not having convictions. He says that the best kind of tolerance has the kinds of convictions that lead you to treat people who disagree with you with honor and with love and with kindness.
That sounds great, but I want to challenge you a little bit on that, because critics of Christianity might rightly say, well, I'm not seeing this broadly, and isn't this meant to be a transformative faith? What's going on?
Well, it is meant to be a transformative faith, and what's going on is, I suppose, what you could call a hypocrisy problem. You know, we're all hypocrites. In other words, that there's no person in the world who lives completely consistently with whatever their belief systems are and with that, with whatever their ideals are. And so really the question, you know, for those who would identify as people of faith should be this: what kind of hypocrite am I going to be? Am I going to be a jerk, you know, the kind of person who alienates people and makes a lot of enemies? Am I going to be that kind of hypocrite, or am I going to be the kind of hypocrite who apologizes and asks forgiveness and becomes humble when he makes a mistake and lives inconsistently with his beliefs? And there's a lot of that going on. It doesn't get publicized because it doesn't make a good story and it's not tweetable. But there's so many wonderful things. You know, Nicholas Kristof, who's a very secular, you know, New York Times writer who covers poverty and disasters and such all over the world, has, I think, done some wonderful pieces where he has actually complimented Christians. And he basically says, look, I am personally not a Christian myself. He actually says he thinks that some of our beliefs are a little bit weird and strange, you know, virgin birth, resurrection from the dead. He's got a point. But he says, you know, I'm really getting weary of hearing Christians being the punchline at New York cocktail parties, when every time I go to a place where there's natural disaster or deep poverty, it's the Christians who are the first to show up and the last to leave, and they're the ones who empty their pockets the most to bring relief. And so there are all kinds of wonderful things going on around the world. They just don't get covered as much. And yet there is a hypocrisy problem that we all need to deal with and point our finger in the mirror before we think about pointing our fingers anywhere else.
What about Jesus in all of this? Now, lots of people want to claim him as part of their tribe, a Republican, a Democrat, liberal, conservative. He's a bit difficult to pin down, though, isn't he?
He is. You know, he is on the one hand more conservative than the most conservative person, because it says that he will fulfill every bit of the law of God without exception, and yet he's also more progressive or liberal than most liberals, because he was constantly offending the conventions and status quo of his day, you know, reaching out and spending time with the poor, the marginalized, lepers, and all these kinds of people that had been sort of pushed to the margins of society, Jesus brought into his inner ring. And so, politics aside, as a person, he was on the one hand very conservative, on the other hand very liberal, and on the other hand neither, which confounds all of us, and also on some level makes all of us want to assume that Jesus is on our side.
Now, Scott, you've clearly written this book for Christians, but what can the interested bystander get out of it as well?
Well, I've written it for Christians as a means to consider how Christians might better engage with people who don't share their beliefs. And so maybe the way that an innocent bystander, I love the way you phrased that, could benefit from the content of the book is just to see that in the book that there are many, many Christians who want to be in good relationships and in life-giving friendships with people who do not necessarily share their beliefs about Jesus or about various, you know, ethical questions and that sort of thing, that there are plenty of Christians in the world who want to have friendships with those who are not Christian.
Well, Scott Sauls coming to us from Nashville today. The book is called Jesus Outside the Lines, A Way Forward for Those Tired of Taking Sides. It's great chatting to you, Scott. It's a great book. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. It's great to have your company. We'll see you next time.